Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on State Senator Eddie Melton dropping out of the governor's race. Rebecca Thiel reports on questions surrounding self-testing at the Arcola Middle Burnt Harbor site. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Northwest Indiana-based immigration attorney Alfredo Estrada. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Democratic State Senator Eddie Melton dropped out of the governor's race Monday. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandi Smith reports that leaves two Democrats looking to unseat Republican Governor Eric Holcomb.
The surprising announcement comes shortly after the last campaign fundraising period ended, and it appears it didn't go well for Eddie Melton. In a statement, the Gary Democrat says, quote, "Unfortunately, politics today require way too much of a candidate's time being spent on the phone chasing dollars." Melton says instead he'll run for another 4 years in the state Senate, to which he was first elected in 2016. His departure from the race leaves healthcare executive Woody Myers and tech CEO Josh Owens as the only Democrats vying to beat incumbent Eric Holcomb. The deadline for the candidates to collect 4,500 signatures, 500 from each congressional district, to make the gubernatorial primary ballot is February 7th. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. Since ArcelorMittal's Burns Harbor facility spilled cyanide and ammonia into a Lake Michigan waterway in August, the state has required the plant to send daily test results to the Indiana Department of Environmental Management. Now, as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel reports, the agency says the company has been distorting those results.
In a letter to ArcelorMittal this week, IDEM says the Northwest Indiana facility has been retesting when test results are higher than they should be, sometimes replacing the higher number with a lower one. The company has denied the accusations. Natalie Johnson is the executive director of the environmental group Save the Dunes. She says if IDEM is right, that's unacceptable behavior from ArcelorMittal. She says it also begs the question, does letting companies monitor themselves work?
Well, quite honestly, we don't think so.
Johnson thanks IDEM for keeping ArcelorMittal accountable and says that the state should give more funding to the budget-strapped agency to inspect industrial facilities. IDEM refused to make anyone available for an interview. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Rebecca Thiel.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. The new mayor of Gary wants the city's school corporation to demolish 10 shuttered schools amid growing concerns that they have become havens for crime. The Times reports Mayor Jerome Prince directed his building commissioner to hold a hearing on the matter February 3rd. If the hearing body determines the 10 schools are unsafe, Prince said he believes the Gary Community School Corp will be legally required to demolish the buildings by March 5th. Peter Morikis, the school corporation's emergency manager, says he looks forward to discussing the matter with the city. Police discovered a homicide victim inside one of the abandoned schools in November. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. A new report shows that 65 Indiana children died from abuse or neglect, during 2018, the same number as its last year-long review. The Indiana Department of Child Services said it investigated 242 child fatalities that happened in 2018, determining that 26% of those deaths were from abuse or neglect. Northwest Indiana's Lake County had the most abuse or neglect deaths during 2018 with 8, while Central Indiana's Madison County was the next highest with 5. Those deaths occurred while the Child Services Agency has struggled with a high turnover among caseworkers and a jump in cases blamed on more drug-addicted parents.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
President Donald Trump is calling for new diplomatic efforts after a series of ballistic missiles were fired at military bases in Iraq housing American troops. During Wednesday's press conference, Trump indicated that tensions were easing after the attack, which killed no U.S. troops. Distinguished professor for the Department of Central Eurasian and Iranian Studies at Indiana University, Jamshid Chosky, says while open hostilities may be over, a return to status quo could be just as problematic.
That is, shall I say, the greatest danger, and the most likely probability is escalating those proxy wars that have occurred against the Saudis, against Israel.
The missile strikes come after Trump ordered the killing of Iranian General Qasem Soleimani during a visit to Iraq. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani tweeted Wednesday that Iran's final answer to the attack is to, quote, kick all U.S. forces out of the region. Chosky says U.S. troops leaving Iraq, a goal Trump has said he wants to achieve, would leave a dangerous power vacuum in the country.
Iraq is not capable of standing up on its own, period. And essentially, it would become a de facto proxy and colony off the Iranians.
Trump also says that Iran, quote, will never be allowed to have a nuclear weapon. Chosky says if Iran does begin to pursue nuclear weapons again, it could quickly escalate tensions between the countries.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A House committee easily approved legislation Wednesday to raise the age to smoke and vape from 18 to 21. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports, despite the bill's widespread support, not everyone who testified likes every provision.
The bill imposes significant penalties on retailers who sell smoking or vaping products to anyone under 21, but it eliminates existing fines for anyone underage from possessing those products. Grocery and convenience store lobbyist Joe Lackey says that doesn't make any sense.
It's like saying somebody has cocaine, it's legal to have the cocaine, but it's illegal to sell it.
But American Heart Association lobbyist Danielle Patterson says there's little evidence fining kids for underage smoking helps treat their addiction.
In fact, there's published evidence that shows penalties on underage tobacco users can make tobacco products more appealing to children.
The legislation now heads to the House floor. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Lawmakers and activists gathered at the Indiana State House to support redistricting reform ahead of the new maps drawn in 2021. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman reports the bipartisan group promoted two bills for greater transparency in redistricting.
Next year, Indiana's constitution requires legislators to redraw maps for state and federal voting districts based on population data from the U.S. Census. Republican State Senator John Rucklehouse has authored legislation to promote greater transparency in that process. One bill he's offered for the last 3 years would create a redistricting commission. The second bill would create an educational tool to teach citizens about the process and allow them to draw their own maps.
We've entered an era now that people want transparency. The ultimate goal here is to draw as competitive maps as possible. Competition is a good thing.
Rucklehouse says these bills have both Republican and Democratic support in both the House and Senate. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Lauren Chapman.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's Regionally Speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Northwest Indiana immigration attorney Alfredo Estrada.
Yeah, 2019 has been a very busy year for many different topics here in Northwest Indiana. One of them in particular is the immigration issue. And we have a gentleman who's eminently well qualified to talk about that. Alfredo Estrada is a partner with the law firm of Burke, Costanza & Carberry here in Northwest Indiana. In fact, he's the co-chairperson of the firm's immigration Immigration Practice Group, and we've had him on before. In fact, the last time we had a chance to talk at length with him was 3 years ago. That was when he was one of the panel members for a special public forum that we held on the issue of immigration. That was held at Purdue University Northwest in the Room with a View conference room on campus in Hammond. And we are lucky to have Alfredo back with us here in the studio today. Thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, if you will give us an idea of, at least in your view and with the information that you get to gather from all of your sources, how 2019 seemed to go on the issues, and several of them I know, on immigration, Northwest Indiana, how the general region, as well as the nation, if necessary.
Well, here regionally, I think what we've seen is the continued litigation of the Welcome City Ordinances in Gary and East Chicago, and I believe those are still going forward with the cities defending them, and then some local entities as well, municipalities adopting the DACA, support of DACA and DREAMer resolutions. During this time last year, there was that uptick in, you know, raids either at local establishments or construction sites, and we haven't seen any change in that here recently.
I think one most notable raid was one that happened at a restaurant in Porter County that really got a lot of people upset about that, brought a lot of attention as well in the media.
Yeah, there were two Porter County restaurants that got raided along with a East Chicago site all on the same day, the day before Christmas Eve of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So and then that carried into 2019, but that was really an infamous raid, and that's where the excise police kind of work with immigration, get the warrant to search and look into establishments due to excise violation and coordinate that raid with immigration.
Did it turn out that those were some of the incidents that could probably qualify as not only both the high points but the low points as well?
Well, yeah, nobody. I don't think the community, at least my opinion, the community doesn't like to see individuals who run good establishments in their community go through that. So I don't know the high points as to immigration enforcement for sure. Mm-hmm. That's what ICE is. Their purpose is, and then low points maybe within the community.
When you talk about what ICE has been doing here, a lot of times we take a look not only at these raids that have been conducted and these two that got a lot of attention here, as you mentioned, at the end of 2017 going into last year, but also, too, the immigration flights out of Gary Chicago International Airport.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while since we've been aware. I'm sure they have been going on, but they've actually come public. Bring us, I guess, an idea of what these flights are all about and why it's so important to be sure that they are tracked.
Well, the flights are, when an individual gets placed into removal proceedings, they go through their due process hearing and are allowed to submit defenses or cancellation and deportation proceedings. And after the hearings are conducted, there's an order of removal given. And generally, the ones who are flown out of the Gary International Airport are those who are detained docket, meaning they're in detention by immigration. They haven't been given a bond. They're not necessarily the ones who go through that process while not in detention. So they're still ongoing, as far as I know. And, you know, I think it's important that to know what's going on in our airport. You know, it's our local airport here. And whether you have an opinion on whether it should be or shouldn't be, that's up to the listener, though.
I know the detention issue has been going on for quite some time, and in particular, it's even stretched into Illinois, because I understand in particular that these cases that have come up with those detainees that fly out of the Gary Airport are brought over from Illinois in particular. Tell us about how they've been kept over there and the situation that involves them and not being able to get, certainly not to go through the process of being allowed to stay home.
Yeah, so there's five detention, long-term detention facilities within our district, and there's four in Illinois and one in Wisconsin. There's a short-term detention center in Brazil, Indiana, mm-hmm. that mainly focuses on individuals who are picked up by ICE and detained short time around the Indianapolis or southern part of the state. So the individual waits, is processed, is allowed a bond hearing, and if it's not granted bond, it must stay within their time of deportation proceedings within those contracted facilities, which are mostly county jails contracted by ICE to hold individuals.
Are we finding the same problems that come up with ICE and with detention and with other cases involving immigration, in particular with folks who don't have the documentation in other parts of Indiana, or do they seem to be focused up here and maybe perhaps in Indianapolis?
I have clients all over the state, eastern border, western border, south, down towards the Kentucky border as well, Indianapolis area, all over the state. So I think there's a presence and an enforcement that is broad.
When we take a look at what's being done locally here, I guess maybe we should say what should be done locally, if it hasn't already been done or could maybe, as we go into this new year, be done to deal with some of these issues involving immigration. And then let's take a look at the little broader picture, in particular on the statewide and the national level.
Well, locally, I think, what they've done locally here is for activists and community residents to push resolutions within their own municipalities. East Chicago and Hammond, recently Hammond just passed their resolution in support of DACA and DREAMER, the DREAM Act. And that took some time, but when I was there at the Hammond City Council, it was a packed room because of that resolution. So I think locally, individuals who support these things could, speak to their local officials on doing those. And they're non-binding, but it's a way to get the issue out that the cities are in support of their residents within their cities or counties that may be DACA or DREAMER or immigrants. Mm-hmm. Statewide, last year I know there was some believe there was a bill in committee regarding undocumented able to receive a driver's license. Many states around the nation are allowing undocumented to receive a driver's license on the premise that it increased security for police officers to know who's driving the car, brings insurance rates down because everybody could then get insurance and things of that nature. And there was also a bill in the Senate by Senator Eddie Melton that would outlaw for-profit detention centers. That didn't get out of committee, but, I'm not sure if they're going to bring both of those back. Earl Harris, and state representative Earl Harris out of East Chicago, brought a bill in committee to allow in-state tuition for individuals who may not be documented but graduated from a state high school. So those are some bills that were down at committee. None of them, I believe, left. But those are things locally and statewide that I think have been moving towards coming to its day.
If you'll go back to the measure that got through the Hammond Common Council, the resolution that actually I understand was the second time around for it, that it went through once or went up before the council members once before, didn't make it, and then finally this year, this past year we should say, in this recent month of December, it finally came up before the Hammond Common Council and was approved. Tell us a little bit about the differences between those two bills or two resolutions, mm-hmm. I should say.
So former Councilman Anthony Higgs first brought the resolution to the council maybe a year and a half ago, and it didn't receive a second. There was some change in language that allowed the council to feel more comfortable that it would lessen the risk or really be no risk of litigation regarding Welcome City and the removal of federal funds due to the passing of the resolution. So once we ironed out that language with the city council, there was a lot more community support this second time around for the resolution. It passed 9-0, and all members of the council put their name in as authors.
Now, we talk about, I guess, the interest and I guess even in the news nationally about coming up with a comprehensive immigration reform proposal. What, in your view, would that look like?
Well, the last time we had any type of immigration reform was in 2001, and there's some particular things that we could do to address the reality of immigration here in the United States and still have keep the best interests of our country in mind. But what needs to be done is first for us to admit that there's two different separate issues regarding immigration. And one is family, keeping U.S. citizen families together. There's kids who have U.S. citizen parents who may be immigrants, keeping those families together and making sure the statutes reflect that reality. And the second are border and national security interests. Those are two separate issues that we can address separately and still have a workable act in an Immigration Nationality Act that would address the realities that we have. So I think any type of comprehensive immigration reform is first going to be, first and foremost, anything that would address Dreamers, right? There was a Dream Act that's bipartisan support, but has always failed to be passed, that a large amount of the citizens in our country support. And whether that we could get that passed or address that issue is going to be, I think, a litmus test to see if we could get comprehensive immigration reform passed. I think if you look at the presidential candidates in their immigration platform, they address what's known as the 3 and 10 year bars. Those are for individuals who have a year of unlawful presence. They get a 3 year bar if they return back to their foreign country. Mm-hmm. And if they have more than a year and return to their foreign country, they trigger a 10 year bar. Mayor Buttigieg, former presidential candidate Castro, and I believe Elizabeth Warren all propose that those bars be eradicated, that the 212A9B bars are gone. So an individual does not need a waiver to seek relief from that inadmissibility and could go through the consular processing a bit smoother. But I think more importantly, there's a former act. It's called the Legal Immigration Family Equity Act, and it was passed under the George H. Bush administration and then reenacted by President Clinton. That allows an individual who came here undocumented or overstayed a visa who has a petition prior to a certain date to pay a fine and then adjust status here in the United States. It doesn't require them to go to their home country to obtain their legal permanent residency. And what that does, it focuses on the reality that there are families that are dependent upon these immigrants and they need to stay intact, in that a departure to their home country for a significant amount of time is harmful to those U.S. citizen families. So that has not been reenacted. The date right now is April 31st, 2001. So it's been 19 years since we have addressed this question. And it was bipartisan then. It makes the individual pay a fee, a penalty. And I think it's something that Congress could reenact pretty quickly to update that date and address the reality of immigration here in the country.
Well, we talk about Congress, since this has become obviously a very important national issue, even though it does touch Northwest Indiana. Northwest Indiana has an opportunity to be able to vote on a selection for a new member of Congress. As we know, that Congressman Pete Viscoski has decided not to seek re-election. And there are a number of people in the Democratic primary election coming up on May 5th that would like to take his, at least be on the ballot, to be able to take his seat in the general election in November. What are your views about what you know about the candidates have announced so far that they're interested in being on the ballot in May?
Yeah, so out of the maybe 7 that have announced, I've spoke with 4 of them, mm-hmm, regarding multiple issues, but of one of them being immigration. I think all of the 4 that I spoke with all have a good heart and intention when coming to immigration reform and understand there needs to be at least some change. I would like to see them develop their platform on it into maybe get a little bit more educated on what exactly needs to be done in order when they're in Washington to address the issue.
Do you think that it's in this case because it's very early in the process? In fact, candidates haven't officially, although I'm sure they have already, but they officially haven't necessarily filed their paperwork to, mm-hmm, become candidates. They have a little bit of time left this month to do that, but they have to do it, obviously. Do you see, at least in your discussions with the candidates, and I'm sure you'll have more as time goes on here during the early stages of the primary election campaign with these folks, do you see anything in particular that you want to get from them, or you see that in their proposals, their platforms, mm-hmm, planks about these particular issues?
Well, I think the first thing you want to, you know, just personally, what first thing I want to see is there's an interest in immigration reform and whether they understand that there's a need for one and the ability to comprehend the complex issues that are within this country. So, mm-hmm, that I've spoke generally with them, and I think they all have the intention of addressing the issue, if possible, and if they become congressmen. So we'll see. I think what it will do is cause a bit of debate within this primary election, and I'm interested to see what type of platform and how they develop that issue and how they would advocate for immigration reform.
We talked here about what the local governments are doing in the issue of immigration. We talk about the impending candidates for the congressional seat that's open with the primary election coming up first. What can Northwest Indiana Citizens General do about the issue of immigration?
One thing I like to do is speak truth about the topic, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of rhetoric out there on immigration, and I think what we could do is speak truth about it, and then come to a bit of a recognition that our economies, our communities, all depend upon immigrants, whether we like it or not. Right now, that's where we're at. So what they could do is just brush up on the topic, see the truth in all of it.
It's quite a topic to take on, and a lot of research that many people probably have to do. But I'm sure it's something, as we go on into the 2020 months ahead before the elections, it's something to keep an eye on what the candidates have to say about it and make a wise choice at the ballot box in May, to be sure. And Alfredo, thank you for spending time with us to talk about the issue overall, about immigration reform, about the issues here in Northwest Indiana, and a look ahead is what the candidates who will be running for office coming up have to say about the issue. And we hope to have you back here during the months ahead to talk more about it.
No, let me know. Thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you. Alfredo Estrada is a partner with Burke Constanza and Carberry Law Firm here in Northwest Indiana. He focuses, among on other practices, on immigration as well. And you're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.